In general, I would say just learn in your target language. Do anything in your target language and just trust the process. And if you are not pushing, if you are just, you know, trusting it with ease, learning, doing things, you don't have to call it working on language or learning or studying language. This is very hard for the brain, I think. Just enjoy learning and you will learn your language eventually.
Hi, Eliska.
Hi, Alvaro.
Well, welcome to the podcast. First of all, it's really a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your background, especially when it comes to languages and your successes, your failures, what languages do you try to learn and so on? Anything that you think is relevant.
So I guess I'll first introduce myself briefly. Yeah. Because I don't think you guys know me. Or maybe you do, I don't know. So my name is Eliška and I'm a Slow Czech founder and I'm a mompreneur also, which means that I'm a mom. I have a 1 year and a half boy. That's why we have a lot of toys and Lego everywhere.
Right.
Because my husband's a huge fan of Lego. And I'm an entrepreneur. I have a company called Slow Czech and it's really, really fun. I love it and I enjoy it and it brings me happiness into my life. And I speak a couple of languages. I speak Czech because I'm Czech. I speak French, German, English, and then some Russian. I understand. I could say something. And I was learning Estonian, Esperanto, and Arabic.
Nice. Pretty related, the three of them, right?
Exactly. I did some Spanish when I was 13, but I remember, no tengo dinero, no tengo amigos.
Well, really useful places, yeah.
So what would you like to know, Alvaro?
So, yeah, like, for example, your first experience with languages, was it English that you learned in school, or?
So, my first language was indeed English. And I remember I started learning English when I was maybe 4 or 5. In Czech Republic, we start learning English at the age of 8, I think. My parents put me to a little group of children, and we would do, like, 1, 2, 4, 5. I remember this, some games and, you know, 3 elephant colors. That's all I remember. Then grammar school, I don't remember at all. I remember we had one teacher and at the beginning of every lesson, he would ask, what day is today and what's the date today? Okay. It was so annoying. And then I remember, when I was 13, I went from the secondary school, from the grammar school, I went to a 6-year-old long, like, kind of special secondary school, but just the general school. And then we would need to go to the university. And I remember having some lessons of English where we would need to learn drink, drank, drunk, fly, flew, flown, be, was, where, been.
Yeah.
And today, still today, when I want to say I've been or I have drunk, I have drunk, I need to think about it. It's so annoying. I hate her, my teacher. Right. We would do some fun activities, but like every 3 months or reading a Cambridge magazine and that's it. Mm. And then I think I learned English mostly when I was living abroad and speaking to foreigners from all over the world.
Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting. The drink drunk bike thing is so common everywhere. Like learning the might be lost.
So annoying.
I still remember those as well. Yeah, it's funny. I was talking about it recently with another guest that remember that. I don't know if it was the same in the Czech Republic. I guess it's international, but when it comes to learning the alphabet in English. That there used to be a song like A, B, C.
Hello.
It was funny because I was thinking about it the other day. And when I need to spell something out, if I'm going to say, you know, one of the letters at the end of the alphabet, I need to go through the entire song. I say like A, B, C, D, you know? But instead, if I need to spell, when I need to say the letters from words that B-I-B or C-I-A, FBI, those I don't have any issues with. Because I've sort of acquired them the natural way, redundant words, right? So if I need to say B-I-P or something with the B, I, or P, I don't have any issues.
Or for me, the hardest, sorry.
Yeah, I need to go, otherwise I need to go through the entire song. You know, anyway.
For me, the hardest is the mix, because I speak French. My husband's French, so French and English, and I never know G, J, 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 J. So, like, I have to DJ. I know DJ, J is, like, you know, this in English. I have to think about some acronym I know already.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not working.
Yeah, you find your ways in a natural way, like, yeah, you know, like DJ, you know, exactly. Yeah, in that sense, I think of, like, I love watching basketball, NBA basketball, like American basketball. But actually, the thing that helped me learn English the most, by the way, and a lot of the players, their initials, they have like JJ something, DJ, so that's how I remember. It's true, like the G, J distinction.
And the giraffe or giraffe.
Okay. Yeah. But anyway, so that was your first contact with English. But you're saying traditional classes, like, you know, drink, drink, fine type of classes. And the first time you went abroad, where was it, first of all? And do you remember your first experience trying to communicate in the language after those classes?
I think it was Manchester, and I was like 12. And I remember I was trying to say something, but I really didn't have any confidence, and I wasn't speaking really. I wouldn't just, you know, say, hello, how are you? Anything. And even my dad, he would, because it was to meet my dad's boss, and we would go to the Manchester United and Manchester Newcastle, or I don't know, some match, a football match.
Hey.
So like 2 weeks beforehand, he would teach me, like, you need to say, how do you do? And you answer, how do you do? This is all I knew. I have to say, how do you do?
Nice. Right. So after those years, that's all you know, all you knew, right?
Kind of.
And obviously, you didn't understand anything that people said in Manchester.
I don't think so. I don't really recall any detailed experiences. But overall, I feel like I didn't say much. I was speaking to my parents, my brother, and trying to say just hello, and that's it. Like, or the fish and chips and peas, it was not up to me. Like, no, I don't know what to say. I will not understand what they are going to tell me. Please come with me.
Right. But too high level right now.
Too high level.
Yeah, that's the issue many times with when you learn to discuss it, like, you know, French for tourism.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, what to say in the restaurant? People memorize it or learn it consciously, then they go to the country, they say it. Let's assume that they say it correctly, so the other person understands. Let's assume that. The problem is then the other person, the native speaker, comes back with a question of their own. And then comes the trouble, right?
And then they switch to English.
What? Yeah. And like, looking at in hindsight, do you remember the one thing, the one experience, the one resource that really helped you acquire English finally? Or what? How do you make the jump from, you know, traditional classes, not being able to say anything besides hello and things like that, and not understanding anything to being able to communicate in the language, being able to understand native speakers. What was the process that got you to the?
To me, I would say it was mostly my willingness to push myself to really go there, because I knew that I was able to recall, maybe to say some words, because I spent so much time learning English. So then you just need to go there and just say something. And I think when I was living abroad, I really learned to just jump into the situations and do things that not all the people would do, because this is something that will make you progress. This is exactly where you will go further. So it was mostly me and my courage, I would say.
Yeah. And where do you live abroad first?
I'm speaking about French now, because I was living in France. I spent 5 years in France, in Brittany. That's why I have my mug. This is a Breton. The drapeau breton, the Brittany flag.
Where was it in Britain, like Nantes or Rennes or?
Rennes and Brest.
Okay.
And Toulon.
So then I'm guessing when you first got to France, you didn't speak French, so you communicated in English?
I actually learned French at school. I was studying French, and French was a language I've always wanted to know. It was something I really, really wanted to learn. So when I switched schools, I signed up for French. Unfortunately, I had to learn German, so that's why I know some German. Then I continued a bit, but I learned French mostly on my own. I was like 15 years ago when I started, and there were no incomprehensible, no online or nothing. So I would just try to find a teacher in my city, and I would buy all the books that existed. It was so boring. I remember I never got further than into the second chapter or third chapter, and I was just trying to learn to do anything that was possible. I went to intensive lessons and to Alliance Française in a 200-kilometer far city, but I learned French. And then so when I moved to France, I already spoke some French, but it was this kind of French where you need to think a lot. You need to think about the words. And when you say or when you speak, it's kind of, it's okay, but we don't say it. Or
yeah.
It's not correct. Or it sounds weird, but I understand.
Yeah. In that sort of broken French, that because you've been learning the language consciously through traditional classes, you need time to sort of access that consciousness. You need time to access that. But when you're speaking like, you know, you always have to think about it. And first of all, it's a little bit awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like 15, 20 minutes into a conversation like that, your head is like exploding.
Right? Mm-hmm.
It's so tired. Yeah. We've all gone through that, I think, yeah.
I remember first 2 weeks, I was sleeping constantly. I was so, so tired. My living in French, it was so, so exhausting.
Right. And could you understand native speakers when you first got to France? Or how was that?
So it depended. Because I remember that it took me some time to some people to understand them, because I needed to get used to their accent, to get used to the words they're using, because I was used to, I met my husband there. So it was just a couple of months we were together, and I was used to him speaking French to me. It was different kind of French also. It was nothing professional. It was like, mon amour. So this is not something you will hear out there.
Right.
So I know that I had to get used to the accent, get used to the way the person speaks, because the variety of words every person uses is different for everyone. Yeah. And what was the most difficult for me was that So I knew, I would say like B2, C1, or maybe C1, a good to C1 level. And I was struggling the most on the phone. Firstly, I was so scared. And secondly, I just...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's so hard.
Yeah.
And secondly, I was struggling when people were talking about the famous, I don't know, the stand-up comic, the people on the TV, the comic books from their childhood, the jokes, the what's happening in the radio, you know, this culture thing that you don't have access to
right.
when you're learning normally, kind of the traditional way, the old way.
Yeah.
And this was, even though you know the language, you can't be the part of the conversation because you just don't know the names, you don't know who those people are. You need to know who Barack Obama is to give some feedback to the person. So to me, this was the hardest for me. And I felt like, I don't belong here. What's going on? I know the language, but I don't understand anything.
Right. Yeah, it's like, yeah, context is everything. And what I mean by that is another one of the problems of traditional classes is it's just so isolated, if you want. And like, there's no context. It's just like, oops. Like crazy stories. Not crazy stories, but you know, not just that you're learning the wrong way by consciously paying attention to the grammar rules and so on, but the little stories that you can find in those textbooks have no context, they make no sense, they're not interesting, have nothing to do with the actual culture from the country, like you said. You
know, mm-hmm.
It's all bumps in the road.
So I think one of the key points is to tell to yourself why you are learning the language. You want to know the grammar, you want to understand the book, so you want to communicate to people. If you want to communicate, so you will need to learn different kind of language.
Yeah, and in a different way.
Definitely.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, and also I've seen that in my case, but in most people's cases, that they're trying to learn language, French in your case, or English, and you go to quote unquote traditional classes. But the people who actually end up acquiring the language on their free time, they're listening to music, they're reading comic books because they're interested in them. So many times, because people who end up acquiring language have done both, meaning conscious traditional classes and some other activities on their own, we give the credit to traditional classes because it's easier to measure, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm learning new rules, I'm learning new vocabulary, things like that. Whereas the other part, you're listening to music, you're reading books for the fun of it, just for peer pleasure, right? But it's hard to measure how much you've improved after listening to half an hour of, I don't know, a French holiday, for example, right? But I'd argue that's actually the thing that's helping you, right? So when it comes to French, besides the classes, what was there anything that you were doing in your free time? Were you getting exposed to the language in a different way? Before even you met your husband, of course. Because from that point on, you started communicating, right? And then there's also this like one-on-one conversation and you want to communicate, you want to, you know. So he is going to adapt the way he communicates to make it comprehensible for you. Mm-hmm. While when you're in a conversation with 5-6 native speakers, that's not the case most of the time, right? They're not going to adapt the way they communicate to make it more comprehensible for you. But on the one with your boyfriend at that time,
mm-hmm.
you're not doing that, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then you wish for any activity, any like listening to music, reading, something that you did for pleasure that may have an impact on your learning?
What I did was I went abroad. I was 18, so I just found 1 month international volunteering camp where we were helping mentally handicapped people. So we would play games with them, read, watch. I watched the, I don't know if you know Sissy. I watched Sissy like 50 times.
Russian, like the, what's the name? Yeah.
No, Austrian one. The Austrian.
Oh, yeah. I mixed that. Yeah, like the, oh, what's the word? It's like an emperor, but.
Emperatrice Sissy.
Yeah, right. Emperatrice in Spanish, but it's, yeah, anyway. Yeah.
So I just found, I don't know how, I contacted someone, I didn't know, she recommended me this place, so I just went there, and there were 15 French, 15, something like that, half-half foreigners, and we were helped by two, like, organizers, maybe. So they would help us to go to the places, and they would organize activities for us, so it was like camp, where we would exchange French, learn French, and be, it was not far from Bordeaux. So it was great. And I didn't know that our organizers were not French. They were Germans, but I didn't know that. They just think they're French because they speak French. So my French was very bad.
Okay.
Then I went abroad two times more. And this is something that helped me the most. Really just go there and try to survive.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a fan of music, or I didn't know what to listen. I don't think that you can, or I can't learn language with French music, even though it's part of the culture and it's good to know them. Now I know the bands and everything, thanks to my French friends and French husband. But... And I was reading books when I was abroad. So I bought French books because it was not available in those times in Czech Republic. So I bought some books there, books that I knew already in French. And I would just read them after work or after my day.
Nice. Yeah, so there are always activities like those books. So just diving headfirst into the country and just gonna go there, and whatever happens, right?
Exactly. So I think I've always been this adventurous person, even though I didn't want to admit it, but it helped me the most, really.
Yeah. Just
go there. You need to get to the corridor to see what's, you know, in the behind. If you're not even in the corridor, you don't know how the corridor looks like, so you can't do anything. You can't make any decisions. You can't learn anything. So just enter the corridor, and maybe some different doors will open. Different person you've never met will, you know, enter or come outside, and you will have another opportunity and another. And then I would always. So then, when I was living in France, so I was trying to find some fun job. So every time I would be in some job, I would ask people what they were doing, or, you know, what's their past? And I was like, this is cool. Le vendange. So, you know, like wine, grape, gathering, picking. So I'm going to do that. And then I went there. There I met a person who was doing the saison. So you are working winters, you're working summer. So I'm going to go working in the Alps. So every time I would just find someone interesting, someone whose story was, you know, pleasing to me. And I was like, I'm going to try that.
Right. So would you, this has nothing to do with the language, I'm just curious. Would you just, you know, tapping on the grapes, like the cliche thing, or just picking them?
Just picking them, putting in the basket, and then the basket in the car.
You did it.
And drinking at 7 a.m.
Nice. you didn't get into the actual basket or where the grapes are and step on them.
No. They took the grapes into their machines, and, you know, we could just watch them and ask, and but they were doing it. It was automatic. It was automatic.
Yeah, you sure about curious. Yeah, but that's, I was thinking that also probably the fact that the first experience for you abroad, or one of the first was the camp. Instead of it's an experience abroad in the country, but I think it's a bit safer than just going to the city and trying to make new friends, because you know you're supposed to make friends there, or the atmosphere, the setting is prepared, so you meet new people, so you have to communicate. So I'd say it's a little bit safer when it comes from the standpoint of, you know, not being able to communicate in the language when you get there, as opposed to just going to a country, which can also work. You know, don't get me wrong, but
it's harder.
I'm guessing that it made it safer for you because you already had some people that you wanted to be friends with, and yeah.
But on the other hand, I have to say that I wanted to stay 2 months, so you could do 1 or 2 months. And eventually I did 1 month, because even after first week, I was so unhappy. I was crying. It was so hard. I didn't feel well, or, you know, I didn't know how to make friends. I was not this open person. But this is, I think, something that helped me, because I just stayed there. I knew that I had to do till the end, you know, the 1 month. Mm. And eventually I kind of survived. And then I tried again. But it was not very easy. I didn't know how to create connections, or because I didn't understand what people were saying. It was so hard, and they were foreigners, and their French was so good, and then they had their things on their own, and you know, it was hard for me to just join them, and so I remember it was very painful.
Yeah, that's the danger of immersion sometimes, that especially if you go to a country with the low level. When you're just starting out with the language, it can be a really frustrating experience because nothing is comprehensible for you. And again, I think the camp setting, this might, I don't know, I wasn't there obviously, but it may have been a little bit helpful for you because of that setting. Because if you just go to Paris at 18 years old and you don't speak any French, it's going to be even harder because you're not going to accept anyone. You don't have anyone you're quote unquote supposed to be friends with, you know, you have to look for everything and everyone on your own. So it's even more difficult. So sometimes just going into the country, depending on your level, depending on your personality as well, it can be counterproductive at times. Because, like you said, the frustration can just be so high that you might end up giving up. Yeah,
I want to encourage everyone, or if you are thinking about going abroad, just go. Maybe you will suffer, but then don't stop. Just go again and try again. And you will learn the language. It's not easy. Otherwise, everyone would speak all the languages in the world, right?
There you go. There you go. Yeah, I always talk about it. And nothing worldwide comes easy and fast, right? Well, that's a good attitude. Yeah, it's true. It's true. But what I meant is not everyone has that mindset. And after the first experience that way, like going to the country and suffering and not being able to make friends with someone, they might just come back home and forget about it forever.
But I have to say, my second and third experience, I went on Erasmus, so with my university, and Free Mover, which is same Erasmus, but different budget. Okay. So again, it helps you because you are going there with someone, with some entity, you have some program. And then, so what's happening outside of the program, so where this is where I met my husband. It had nothing to do, you know, with the university, or you just meet some people, you just create new connections, create new life. Mm-hmm. So it's as you said, it's way easier to go with some entity, organization, yeah, someone, and to have already planned something what you're going to do abroad.
All right, good. You get off to a good start. You already have friends, mm-hmm, but you can focus on the language part, if you will. Like, what I mean is, because of that entity or because of that situation, you already have friends that you can have fun with, you can have conversations with, even if your ability to actually communicate in the language is not there yet. But it's not as scary as just going to the country, right? Because I don't know how to put it into words, but it's like you don't need to focus on, you know, just going to random places and trying to make friends. That's going to happen naturally because you're already, how to put it into words. You already had your group of friends in the country. So, quote unquote, you don't need to look for someone else, quote unquote. Because you feel safer, because you're actually, again, it's a paradox, right? But you're actually more open to new experiences, meeting new people, new encounters, right? Because you don't have the pressure of, okay, so the next person I'm going to meet, I really need to do my best. I really need to speak really well, because otherwise they're not going to be interested in me and I'm going to get back to the starting point, right? But because you don't have that pressure, because you already have friends, you're more free, right? You're less stressed when it comes to new interaction. Just making it up on the fly, but I'm guessing that was the experience.
Because I agree, because when you push, when you are creating this pressure or anything in life, you will just, you know, hold it back because you have this energy or impression, or you call it anyhow you want. But this will provide you from creating or getting what you want. So you need this ease, you need this, I'm fine, I'm safe. And then things will just happen as you want, or as they should happen for you, because, you know, it is happening for you. You just need to be open and not just, you know, holding yourself back because you are so stressed and under pressure. And
yeah.
So I agree with you.
And so then you said you speak German as well? Well, a little bit.
Well, I have the B1 certificate, the official Goethe certificate.
How did that happen? Like, how did you learn the language? Was it traditional way as well, or?
Well, I remember, again, from school, the grammar, the secondary school. So instead of my beloved French, I had to learn German. But I kind of liked our teacher, even though it was the Temenoi Einzweidei. It was the book, the regular, just black and white pictures, and der, die, das, deren, and so all the time in my head, I have now the articles. Anytime I want to use like plural of genitive, or, you know, I have to say der, des, or I don't.
Yeah.
And, but I think I learned something. Because then when I decided that I'd like to learn some German, because it was like, what I'm going to do? When I was living abroad already in France, so I decided I'd like to learn some German as a just, you know, fun and test or experience. So I found an online tutor and I told him, okay, I would like to prepare for B1. It's like in 7 months or something. So we would prepare for B1, and in the meantime, I would just listen to slow German, Annick Rubens, that I love so much, or loved, because it's slow, it's comprehensible, it's in German, you don't need to translate, it's just, and you have time to like, okay, I know this word, okay, this is it, and it's just so nice to listen to, so I would listen to slow German like every morning, I think, or really, really a lot. And then I found some German friends and tried to speak some German. And in our city, Brest, there was a Stammtisch, so a monthly meeting organized by French and Germans, so we could exchange, speak French and German. So it was fun as well. But I don't think that my German is very advanced. Well, I understand and I know how the language works. And for me, it's the most special, or it's passionating, I would say, for me to, I was learning Estonian just to understand how the language works, because Estonian has 17 cases or 14 cases. So I wanted to know how language with more cases than Czech can work. So just, you know, I was having some classes and trying to understand, was reading my grammar book, just just to, you know, get to know a weird language that 1.5 million people speak in the world, just for fun. But I remember just Minaol and Ariska. My name is Ariska. And then they have so many articles and changing and according to the case, and
my goodness,
it was crazy. So for me, this was an experiment that I wanted to do for my students, my clients, to understand how they feel when they learn Czech, because they're like, I know, Americans mostly, or French, Germans, British, Japanese, and they don't have the case system. So I couldn't imagine how it works. So now I know how annoying and hard it is. It's not just you have accusative, so you change žena to ženu. No, it doesn't work like that. You can't remember 10,000 words multiplied by 3, by 2, by 7, because plural and 7 cases. You can't just learn it this way, and by 14 in Estonian. So this was my aim, and I went there. I reached my goal, and I'm not learning Estonian anymore, because there are just 2 Estonians living in Brno. So there is like 0 chance I could speak to real Estonians having the same mindset as I do.
Okay.
Maybe online.
Yeah, of course, there's always that option. But that's interesting. So when you try to learn Estonian, how to phrase that question. So where you're already suspecting that something might be wrong about the traditional way, or was it that experience that really opened your eyes, like, oh my goodness, this can be the way?
I think it might be this experience, like this eyes opening experience, because it was maybe 4 years ago, I think. And maybe this is one of the moments when I started to be interested in Stephen Krashen's theory and PRS, and because I understood that no, it's not working like that. It's so boring and it's so hard. Even though you spend so much time every day, I would just spend, you know, learning 30 minutes, those endings to, I know, poises, or you just learn it by heart, those 3 endings. Just for nominative, genitive, and I don't know, ablative, or I don't even remember the names of the cases. But eventually you were not able to say anything, and it was so frustrating.
Yeah, I've talked about it many times, that my wanting to embody it was my eye-opening experience. Because again, I always say that for me, as a native Spanish speaker, if I try to learn French or English or Italian, I can fool myself for a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I tried to learn Polish for the first time, like you said, all those cases, it's just such a different language. But I started to think, there's something wrong. Like, back to your point, if I learn all these crazy endings, all those differences consciously, how am I going to be able to hold a conversation in which I need to think about that consciously all the time? Like, I need 20 minutes for one sentence every time, right? That can't be the way.
Mm-hmm. Is it where? Is it na or do or k? And do you need accusative, or do you need genitive? Or then what's the ending? And is it masculine, feminine, or neuter?
My goodness, what a nightmare. Yeah, exactly. But that was actually the moment that sort of trigger something in me.
I think Estonian was the trigger point for me as well.
Nice. I like that. Yeah.
So if you want to learn Estonian, learn it with stories.
You want to learn any language, but especially Estonian, right?
Especially Estonian. Or a Hungarian, because it's the same language family. But so many cases.
Right. Man.
But I think important thing to mention here is that the endings, the cases, are not so important in the communication. And if you accept that, you just can say, mám rád borůvka. So I like the the blueberries in the incorrect case. It's like yesterday I go, you know what you mean? Yesterday I go swimming pool. Yesterday I went to the swimming pool.
Right.
So we understand. But I think the problem of most of the us adults is that we want to make it perfect from the very beginning. So we tend to just make the sentence perfect by learning by heart the correct endings.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly relate to that, because here in Poland, when I communicate in Polish, I'm sure I'm making like ending errors every sentence. Like, I'm going to, you know, park the particle, things like that. I mean, that one I know, but, or domu at home, right? But those that come up all the time. But when it comes to other more complicated things, I'm sure I'm making errors like all the time. When it comes to the to the cases, to the ending. And my friends perfectly understand what I'm saying.
There is one experience that I talk about quite often when I talk about language learning. We were traveling with my husband for some time in a Land Rover Defender. We were traveling throughout Europe, and we stopped. We liked to stop in little villages and little restaurants and just have. We spent 1 month in Greece just drinking Freddo espresso in the small villages. It was so great. And it was in Serbia, and we just went to some small village, and you just don't speak Serbian or. And we wanted to eat something, so we asked like we want to eat and drink. And the waiter, he was so great. So he told us that he has the chicken, and then he showed his leg. So he has chicken legs. If we want to eat, and he said okay. So for me, this was the most, you know, comprehensive waiter in any restaurant in the world. It was just a small village in the middle of nowhere, and we just, you know, we went there. We didn't speak any word, and we just could have some drink and food. And then you just don't care whether it's potatoes or rice, or you just eat. You're happy because you. So this is experience I like talking about, and I every time I think about it, I'm laughing. Because often, on the other hand, well, I can mention what happens here in the Czech Republic. So what I hear from foreigners, you as a foreigner, maybe you have the same experience in Poland. I have learned some words, or you want to communicate in the restaurant. But Czech people, they hear you are not Czech, and they want to practice their English, or they want to be nice to you to make it easier for you. So you just like dobrý den, kafe, chai, or anything, and they just okay, I will bring you this. They just switch automatically to English, which is so annoying. You just want to learn the language. You are doing anything, you just want, and they people are not helping you. So I want to encourage every native speaker who meets a foreigner learning his language, just speak your language. This is and the most you can do, the least maybe. It's so simple.
Yeah, but make it comprehensible, right? By with gestures and so on. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
well,
like you said,
depends on the level, because your level is already good. You know what to say in the restaurant. You know what sentences you can expect. You just need to practice. Yeah. You're not a total beginner, so you don't need any comprehensible, and you know what sentences and words you can expect in the restaurant. So this is one of the best places you can practice your, you know, everyday Czech or language, but you just need help from people there.
Yeah, if I'm going to the restaurant here in Poland, I understand everything you're saying, but when I'm speaking, I'm probably going to make mistakes when it comes to, you know, the cases, like I said, also. I mean, certainly going to make mistakes. But he or she can understand what I'm saying perfectly, and I understand everything he or she's saying. I'm at that point, right? So, yeah, you're right. But I guess.
So you're lucky they speak Polish to you.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Most part, yeah. Yeah, I think, but you said, for the most part, I think is it comes from one, wanting to actually practice their English, or two, wanting to, for you to understand what they're saying, right? But it comes from a good intent. Most of the time. But you're right. What foreigners need is for you to actually use the language.
So you are a native speaker, just speak your language.
Yeah, good point.
Because then when you are learning a different language, native speakers will help you too.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, that's, I agree with that. Good point. Is there any language that you're learning right now that you'd like to learn?
No, I'm learning baby language.
Oh, that's a whole different experience.
But to me, it's really very interesting to observe my boy, to learn how the language, how to express himself, and he can make himself understood. And if he doesn't need any word or anything, he knows that I understand, so he'll just use this or some sound. And then he has some, he knows some words already, and it's so fun. But I was learning Arabic maybe 2 years ago when I stopped Estonian. So I told myself, I need some hard language, but language that is spoken by more people than 1 million.
Yeah.
So I went for Arabic. And at first it was challenging because I didn't know which dialect to choose. So I tried Fusha, which is the modern standard Arabic.
Mm.
And it was so boring. And I tried 13 teachers on iTalki. And it was so annoying, exhausting. And it didn't help me at all. Yeah. I was telling, every time I was telling them what I need, the way I want to learn, and that I don't want to read your stories in Arabic that I don't know how to read yet. Or I can, but you know, we did like from right to left, we did two lines in 45 minutes. And what's the point? I don't want to learn your prepositions. I want to communicate. So I even showed to one teacher, like with Czech. So I was showing him and, you know, teaching him Czech, and he didn't understand. So it was so frustrating. I was suffering so much. Then eventually, so I was learning eventually Egyptian Arabic. I decided to go for Egyptian Arabic because this is the most comprehensible dialect for all the native speakers of Arabic. Okay. And I had friends from different kind, Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, and Syria, Palestine, but from Egypt, I had more friends, so it was easier here in Brno. And I found one friend who I taught to how to teach me Arabic. So then we would have 15 minutes a day, and he would just say, ahwa, or I forgot everything. So I'm drinking coffee, and
yeah,
it was way better.
Yeah.
So I had to find someone, and it was, so even finding teacher on iTalki or it didn't help me. So I was so frustrated. But I found someone who I could teach how to teach me.
Yeah, well, so
that was good.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. That's something I've talked about several times, because I mean, if you can find a comprehensive lingual teacher that already teaches that way, that's awesome. But you can, you know, find friends and teach them how to teach, because I'm sure they're going to be more open to changing that style as opposed to a teacher who's been teaching traditionally for 20 years, right? They're not going to change their mind.
No.
A friend who's not a teacher, just happens to speak the language, they're going to be more open in general.
Mm-hmm.
To a different approach, right? Yeah, and the interesting part about the first dialect that you talked about is that actually nobody speaks it in real life.
No, it's so useless. Everyone is learning it. You can understand radio and TV, but that's it. And you can read the Quran, Quran.
Yeah.
Mm. Maybe after 20 years of studying.
Yeah, but you said like two sentences in an hour or 25 minutes. Nice. But yeah, getting back to your kid, it's actually like if you pay attention, he can teach you a lot about how the process actually works. Yeah, I'm talking about language, but plenty of other things, of course. But when it comes to languages, he can teach you a lot, like you said, like how he makes himself understood, how much time he listens to the language until he's ready to start communicating, even though he perfectly understands what you're saying, but he can't communicate yet. So he can teach you a lot when it comes to the language. Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm really enjoying this process with him. So I know that, for example, in past, I know, 2 months, I said like 500 times, jedeme autem, like by car. So, so, and he knows auto, autem, then you have jedeme do auta. So you have another different situation, different, you know, what's going on. And so he heard it at least 500 times. And he's just, you know, I know he's processing it and he knows in which situation then to use, or he will use it correctly. But what I like the most, I think, is the books, because you can just say, or even just show, he is showing and I am saying, or I am saying, and he will show. He just knows so many words. He just knows all of them. And just passively, he's showing everything. Yeah. In both Czech and French with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the moment when, so at the beginning, my French husband, so he would spend time with him every evening to read the simple books. It was like, he was maybe 8 months old. And then for the first time, when I took the same book with him, or he has chosen it, or I don't remember, and I said the same, you know, like kitka, flower, la fleur. So then he heard a different word for the same thing, like, he looked at me, what's going on? And then he just accepted it. And since then, it's like, okay, there are two ways to communicate with my parents,
wow.
I guess. And for me, it's not that children know that it's different language. It's just different person, different situation, and different word. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, they just associate the word with the meaning.
And with the person or situation.
Right, yeah. Yeah, what I mean that every time now he's gonna hear the flow, he knows it's a flower. And say the Czech word for it, he's gonna know as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's really interesting. Really interesting. Yeah, you can learn a lot from kids.
Mm-hmm.
As you're doing.
Yeah, so fun.
Yeah, like you said, he knows a lot of things. He's just not ready to start using them yet, but he will. But for whatever reason, we always trust the process when it comes to kids, but we adults don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like with kids, we know sooner or later they're going to start communicating, and we don't freak out. But most people don't freak out. Like they know it's going to happen.
Yeah, when the kid is ready, he will start speaking. Mm-hmm.
But with adults, you don't know. You're not like now, you know. And
but you have to know how to write it, and you have to know gender.
Well, yeah.
And when it's red, it's feminine. And you know what's funny? That some of my students told me, like, actually, I don't understand why it's sometimes red and sometimes blue. You know, to some... There are some pictures somewhere on Instagram, or sometimes the word is red, sometimes it's blue, sometimes it's green. So it's, I don't know if you have it in the Polish or in some books as well. The red is feminine, the blue is masculine, and the green is neuter. But no one ever tells you as a student what it means.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, they're different colors, and I don't know why.
Well, I mean, it depends on the object you're describing. Well, I mean, if the object is feminine, so then you use, I know for red, for example, czerwone is something masculine, czerwona, something feminine, right?
Yeah, but no, I mean, you have like picture of this, so you have like a Batman. So then you have written Batman here, and it will be written in blue, because Batman is masculine word.
Okay, I understand.
So that's how you have pictures with how you're supposed to learn new vocabulary in a funny way.
Okay, so it's set up a trick to help you understand that it's masculine. Okay. I understand now, yeah.
Is that clear?
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense now.
So next time when you see different colors somewhere, you will know what it means, because I guess Polish has also three genders.
Yeah, it does. But all right, I've never thought about it. No.
You see? So teachers all around, or Czech teachers, what I know, they consider or they expect you to know what it means already, because for them it's automatic. We have three genders, we have three colors, that's it.
Right.
And they can't, you know, imagine that maybe you don't know what it means.
Right. But yeah, it's still, it's an attempt to sort of hide the process, but still focus on form instead of meaning.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a good way how to learn, but it's just funny mistake in teaching, I would say.
Okay. All right. So, Liska, any final message for the audience? Any advice?
Well, if you want to learn Czech, you should learn with slow Czech, because it's slow, it's fun, it's comprehensible, it's cultural things, and there are plenty of materials.
Awesome. And yeah, I forgot to say, but I'll leave the link to your channel on the title as well. Is the to your website, whatever you want me to link to. I'll leave all the links in the description. Of course, if you're looking to learn Czech, check it out. Slow Czech.
We have the best teachers for learning Czech in the world.
Any final general message for language students, people who want to learn languages?
In general, I would say just learn in your target language. Do anything in your target language and just trust the process. And if you are not pushing, if you are just, you know, trusting it with ease, learning, doing things, you don't have to call it working on language or learning or studying language. This is very hard.
Yeah.
For the brain, I think, just enjoy learning and you will learn your language eventually.
Love it. I love it. Yeah, actually, I never use the word study. Well, sometimes I'm going to use it because I'm used to it. And that moment I realized, wait, wait, no, that's
learning. It's like a negative word.
Yeah. Studying. Yeah, when you say studying, you usually refer, in your mind, you're thinking about, you know, like studying, like sitting down and memorizing.
Like a medicine student.
Sorry.
Well, it was fun. Thank you for having me, Alvaro.
Thank you, Liska. It was fun. A lot of wonderful experiences. I love the Estonian. I love that. Like, trying to learn, even more difficult from the standpoint of cases, right? To realize that what your students actually need.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. I love that.
I think every teacher should go through some changing, life-changing experience.
Yeah. Good point. All right. So, yeah, thank you again.
Thank you, too. Have a wonderful day.
You too, Liska. Heads on.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for watching this interview. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was helpful for you. And if you want to know more about language learning, language acquisition, like, you know, what's the best way to learn a language, ideas for language learning, the best resources at different levels, here you can find the whole playlist with all the interviews I've done so far with different researchers, teachers, polyglots, and so on. And finally, right here, you smash this guy right in the face to subscribe to my channel. I really appreciate it, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye.